This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
The Bill of Rights lists freedom of speech and certain other rights, such as the right not to incriminate yourself, but the list has gaps. Huge disputes swirl around the question of whether additional rights exist, and if they do exist, about their scope. Is there a right to abortion in the Constitution? To assisted suicide, to marry a person of the same sex. Retained by the people, the silent Ninth Amendment and the constitutional rights Americans don't know they have, by Daniel Farber, shows that these unlisted rights are firmly rooted in the U.S. Constitution. They are grounded in the Ninth Amendment, a potential unexploded landmine within the Bill of Rights. I'm delighted to welcome to the program Professor of Law and author Daniel Farber. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for spending some time with us. I know you're very busy, and we appreciate it. Let's start with the Ninth Amendment. I'm going to begin just by reading it, if I can. Let me find it here. And by the way, if at any time, dear listener, you call this station during this interview at 977-1070, we're going to give you a free copy of the Pocket Constitution provided by the Rutherford Institute right here in Charlottesville. The Ninth Amendment, part of the Bill of Rights, reads, "The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others, other rights, retained by the people." Dan, what does this mean? What does the Ninth Amendment really mean?
Well, I think it means pretty much what it says. One of the big fears about the Bill of Rights was that it could have a negative side effect because they could never list all the rights that people have, and anything that was left off the list, there might be an implication that that was no longer a right. And so the Ninth Amendment was there to ensure that people didn't go that direction, that rights that were not necessarily explicitly listed would still be recognized. And I think that's pretty much what it says in so many words. The language is a little old-fashioned, and the punctuation is a little bit odd by present standards, but I think the message is still right there.
Give us some historic context. Was there great debate about the Ninth Amendment? Who insisted? Do we know who perhaps insisted that it be there? Of course, it sounds, I'm here in Charlottesville, it sounds incredibly Jeffersonian that there be some type of foresight to recognize that, hey, we might not know all the rights that we want to protect here. There might be different rights 100 years from now that society would like to protect. Give us an idea of some appreciation for the historical context of this particular amendment.
Well, when the original Constitution was written by the Philadelphia Convention, they did not include a Bill of Rights. I think primarily because they were hot and tired when the issue came up, and they just didn't want to start with something new. But for whatever reason, they didn't put it in. And that became a big issue during the debates over the ratification of the Constitution. So they were attacked. Then, in response to the attacks, one of their counter-arguments was this idea that it might be dangerous to put in a Bill of Rights because of the negative implication that it would have for other rights. Ultimately, as part of a kind of deal to get the Constitution approved in Virginia and New York, they agreed that they, as soon as it went into effect, that they would come forward with new amendments to create a Bill of Rights. Jefferson was not, although he was very unhappy about the lack of a Bill of Rights, he wasn't specifically involved with the Ninth Amendment argument, but it was still a Virginian, James Madison, who was the prime mover behind the Ninth Amendment. He was the one who actually drafted the initial version of the Bill of Rights, and when he explained that, he said that he had been very worried about this negative implication argument, and therefore he had put in what's now the Ninth Amendment as a way of protecting against that.
We're talking with Dan Farber. His new book is Retained by the People. Also, this Ninth Amendment precedes the 10th, which is similar in many ways, which says the power is not delegated to the U.S. by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Again, sort of an open-ended, looking towards the future kind of wording there. Explain that one to us.
Well, the 10th Amendment was also one of Madison's contributions, and it was aimed at the fear that the federal government might be given powers by implication that were never intended in the Constitution, and that the results might be to undermine the states. So that amendment is really more aimed at a kind of federalism, states' rights kind of thing. Some people confuse the amendments. In fact, even at the time, I think some people were a little bit confused. But I think the Ninth Amendment has maybe some implication for the power of the federal government, but it's primarily focusing on individual rights, not states' rights.
Dan, why do you think it is that most Americans, I think if we polled them, probably don't know the First Amendment, but why is it that most Americans, the folks who do know and are aware of some of those rights that are enumerated in the Bill of Rights, are so unfamiliar with the Ninth Amendment?
Well, it's very interesting. Of course, you're right. Most people don't know the language of the Constitution, even the First Amendment. But the Ninth Amendment, I think, has been especially obscure. And I think the reason is that sort of through historical accident, it never really became a focal point legally. It really, even though constitutional lawyers and the courts have sort of forgotten about the Ninth Amendment, except every now and then, you know, there's some brief recollection, and then it gets submerged again. And the result of that is that I think some things which the courts ought to be doing using the Ninth Amendment and using a similar clause in the 14th Amendment instead have gotten, they've sort of come through the back door. They've tried to stretch other parts of the Constitution to include some of these unenumerated rights. But that's been, you know, that's been kind of tenuous, and it's left a lot of room for attack by people like Justice Scalia, for example, who is opposed to this whole idea of unenumerated rights.
Well, let's talk about Justice Scalia and some other really conservative constitutionalists who say, you know, I'm a strict constructionist. If it doesn't literally say in the U.S. Constitution that a woman has a right to an abortion, then it's not there and she doesn't have the right. And yet, if you read the Ninth Amendment, is that not what the Ninth Amendment says, that a woman has a right to an abortion?
Well, of course, it's not clear exactly what are the unenumerated rights. So, you know, there's a separate question of whether the right to an abortion is one or isn't. But I think the Ninth Amendment's perfectly clear that there are some additional rights that are not in there by name. And for that reason, it's really been kind of an embarrassment to people in this sort of strict constructionist Scalia a school of thought, also in an earlier time to Judge Bork, who compared the Ninth Amendment to an ink blot in the Constitution and said he just couldn't make any sense of it. So typically the response has been to either one of two things among adherents to this view, either to strain mightily to come up with some other interpretation other than what the words of the amendment say. So there are these, you know, very sort of like tax lawyers trying to get around some provision in the IRS, you know, these very clever but, you know, not very well-founded arguments to turn it into something else. Or else, more commonly, what people like Scalia do is they just sort of brush it aside. So Justice Scalia has said, well, yeah, there is a Ninth Amendment, there are unenumerated rights, but you know, they're really, they're not real rights of the kind that courts can enforce. They're just rights that, you know, people can kind of believe in on their own, but that don't have any real legal significance.
That sounds very convenient for him to say.
It is very convenient, I think. And I think he ought to worry about the fact that that's so convenient, especially since he says it without taking any look at all at the history to see if, in fact, there was such a distinction at the time of the framing. And the answer is there wasn't. I think there are at least some, I wouldn't accuse anyone in particular, but I think there are at least some people who are more enthusiastic about following the language of the Constitution when it happens to come out the way that they'd like to go.
We're talking with author and law professor Dan Farber. He's currently teaching at UC Berkeley, but has also taught at Stanford, Harvard, and the University of Chicago Law Schools. His new book is Retained by the People, The Silent Ninth Amendment and the Constitutional Rights Americans Don't Know They Have. If I read your book correctly, Dan, you're not saying we need a Ninth Amendment revolution. You're saying we need a very public and constitutionally grounded discussion about these unenumerated rights that are there in the Constitution.
That's right. I mean, I think I think that, for one thing, as I've said, the courts have done some of this through the back door, but you know they should be coming through the front door on it. But also that we'll get a lot farther in the discussion if we stop wasting all this time and energy about whether there are unenumerated rights, and instead we turn to the significant question, which is trying to figure out what they are.
And how would we do that? Would people just bring suits to the U.S. Supreme Court?
I think there are a variety of ways. Of course, we tend to think about developing rights through litigation because, you know, Americans are, you know, tend to view the courtroom as the way to settle certain kinds of disputes. And I think that would be part of it. And hopefully, you know, and the courts would then be bound by looking at precedents and looking at the established practices of various states and even of maybe international law and trying to determine those rights. But I think that's not the only significance. There's, besides the sort of just political significance of people discussing the issues, I think there's also room for Congress to provide some legislative protection for these unenumerated rights, and in some ways that might be a very healthy approach.
Let's talk about the difference you write in your book between rights and liberty. And you have said the Ninth Amendment was meant to protect fundamental human rights, not just the right to do whatever you want, whenever you want. And specifically, this speaks to libertarians today, big L and small L, who might see the Ninth Amendment as a free pass.
Yeah, I think so. Now, I have to say, at least some of the libertarian writers, I think, have come closer to being right than a lot of other people in talking about the Ninth Amendment. I mean, they have looked at this history and accepted some of it. But I think the problem is that it's gotten filtered through their worldview, which doesn't really draw any distinction between the right to work for less than the minimum wage or the right to work in an unsafe workplace that, you know, gets counted for just as much as the right to raise your children or the right to decide how many children to have in the first place. So I think what they lose is the concept that I think the framers clearly had, that certain kinds of liberty, you might say, that are really kind of in a privileged position. It's not that liberty in general is not a good thing, but there are some aspects of liberty that have an especially high status that we recognize as rights, and I think that's where they kind of go off the track.
Author and professor of law Dan Farber is our guest. His new book is Retained by the People. I want, again, for the folks who are joining this interview late, to read the Ninth Amendment, which is what we're talking about, the Ninth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution in the Bill of Rights. And it reads, "The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people." I have read this 100 times since in reading your book, what's not obvious about that? Are you sometimes frustrated, Dan, when you talk to people who say, yeah, but that's not a real amendment, or a Scalia who might say, yeah, but they're not real rights? Are you frustrated by this in any way? Because it seems to me it's pretty damn clear.
Well, I think it's pretty clear, too, and it is frustrating, especially dealing with people who believe strongly in the importance of the language of the Constitution and of its history. There's some other people who just don't, you know, they don't really care what it says, so, you know, why should this be different? But the ones who say they care and don't pay any attention, it's frustrating. And I think part of it comes down, so I've thought a lot about what's the reason for this reaction. And I think part of it, of course, like everything else, you know, it's hard to keep politics and so forth out of it, but I think part of it is also kind of an intellectual thing. The framers of the Constitution believed that law wasn't necessarily something that was just passed down from a particular authority, that, you know, the legislature of Virginia or Congress was the only source of law, that it had to be in a specific document. They had a sense that law could come from multiple sources, and custom, common law, international practices, and, of course, legislation and constitutions and so forth. And the people who reject this idea tend, I think, to view, you know, that as kind of, I don't know, sort of a fairy tale. They basically think it's a law if somebody with power has announced a rule and will, you know, put you in jail if you violate it, and if that's not true, it's not a law. And so that's one reason why they can't make any sense of this, because the Ninth Amendment assumes that there actually are other rights out there, and these people can't figure out, well, where would those rights come from? You know, if they're not in the Constitution, how could they be rights, real rights? And I think, you know, to bring Mr. Jefferson up, you know, it's the whole idea of the Declaration of Independence, of course, is exactly to the contrary, that there are these inalienable rights that are not created by a particular Constitution, but that exist on their own. And what constitutions do is recognize those rights.
And governments are created among men to protect those rights that exist prior to the government recognizing them.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting. For most of the 19th century, people took the Declaration pretty seriously as a political document. You know, you find Abraham Lincoln, for example, who I've also written about, was, you know, for him that was sort of the focal point of American thought. He once said that the Constitution was the silver picture, but the Declaration of Independence was the golden frame around it, because he thought that what America really stood for was the Declaration, and that the Constitution was a way of getting there. And, you know, that's not really true anymore. People, I think, you know, view it as something that politicians talk about while they're droning away before the fireworks start on the 4th. And, you know, I think, you know, so it, maybe that's part of the fundamental problem, is we just don't take, or at least many people just don't take those ideas as seriously as they did 100 years ago, or certainly 200 years ago.
I couldn't agree more, and I think it's arguable, and I think you have done a great case of doing so in your new book, that the Ninth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution is one of the very most important amendments in there. And it, if you really look at it and read it and just take it for what it says, it bears the very heart of the American experience of what we're trying to do here. You have rights, and the governments are created to protect those. Government wasn't created to give them to you.
I absolutely agree. In fact, I wish I'd said it quite that clearly.
Dan Farber, author and law professor. His new book is Retained by the People, The Silent Ninth Amendment and the Constitutional Rights Americans Don't Know They Have. It's a book I would recommend that you run out and read right now. Dan, thank you so much. It's been an honor to talk to you.
Well, thank you for having me on the program.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. The show can be heard every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 o'clock on News Radio 1070 WINA. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, why not check out our site for hours and hours of archives of Coy's show? You'll also find other radio programs, arts features, public affairs coverage, and more.